right, this is Pure Decking, show number 499 for Thursday, October the 27th, 1787. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you that yelling, "Red Alert, Shields Up," mostly just confuses the other people waiting in line at Wendy's. Especially when you turn around and you're not looking at a phone or anything.
Dude, current year, does anyone even fucking notice that level of weirdness anymore?
No.
No, they don't. You know.
Well.
Even the phrase, "help, help, I'm being raped," doesn't even glance anyone.
Well, I guess, you know, that's why people were able to, you know, lose their shit in McDonald's over,
Szechuan sauce.
Yeah, and, nobody really cared that much. Do you remember AIM? Yes, I remember AIM. I remember AIM, Psychros. Long time back. Back in the AOL days, it was possible to have a lot of fun with people because the instant messaging app wasn't very sophisticated. And because it was just a text box, it was quite possible to put a bunch of carriage returns in the instant message box. Then format some text so that it looked like the username that you were sending was not your username, but, you know, whatever you typed in, and then formatted the text, and then you could put in whatever, whatever you wanted. So I used to have great fun because I had some files with some fun headers saved to save me the typing and the formatting. So I did have AOL internal quality and assurance team. And I could send things. And the best thing to do with that one was never, say you're doing something. Just say, "Please describe in detail the last few things you did online. We're having an issue." And the number of people back in high school you'd send that to, and they would just drop, they'd just disconnect, was hilarious.
Thinking they're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Especially when they've been online for a bit, because it's just like, "Yeah, we're getting something interesting here. Could you please describe in detail what you're doing?" Click.
Waiting for that 3 megabyte woman to come through. It's still loading.
20 years later.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, there were some people going to great lengths to try to get the old AOL interface up and running again with open source software and trying to decode some of the protocols. And
unfettered ICQ should come back.
Oh, yeah. Nothing else, just to get that sound effect.
Uh-huh.
But actually, the DOS AOL was interesting because... He didn't derail the show. He just got me completely, memory hold here, which is weird because he doesn't show up in the six people here, so interesting. Psych Arrows. I see what it did. That's weird. Neat trick. So you can still pull some of these tricks in IRC. That's great. But it did slash me. Yeah, for some reason it said Psych Arrows said that. I don't... Weird. Okay. Well, obviously I don't know that chat interface as well as I used to. But no, you just got me reminiscing. And there were some people trying to get the old DOS version of the AOL disk. They were hacking it because it included basically the full GeoWorks shell under it, because that's how they got around licensing. Anyways, that's enough pretending that, it's high school again and everyone's using 486s and running AOL. What's going on, Mad Ben?
I'm waiting for my new AOL disk to come in. I haven't finished the fish yet.
Taking your disk back to Redbox yet?
I don't do Redbox. You're confusing me with other people. Although now I want to find old AOL disks and drop them in Redbox.
I used to have a supply of them. I mean, you used to keep the floppy disks. Hell, you could format them and use them. Had to put a piece of tape over them, but, so what? The little write protect hole.
Most of mine went for drink coasters in the share house.
Well, yeah, they were good for that. Of course, popping the little metal center out of the floppy disk, I had a collection of floppy coins. I don't remember what I was going to do with them. But, yeah, I found that going through some stuff the other day. It's like, man, why do I have these? It's hilarious. And I didn't finish the intro. What's up, are you?
Not much, man. Learned the dangers of not hydrating enough yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. You can fuck yourself up with that.
Yeah. No, I drank enough water and stuff. I just didn't take in enough salts and that. Even though I had a big lunch and everything, I just mustn't have digested enough. Got a bad cramp. Nearly drove my car off a cliff. Great. Good day.
Jeez.
Put shit in perspective, I tell you that, man. Really does.
Well, yeah, I imagine driving off the cliff will do that.
Well, lying in a car park screaming, trying to get your leg to fucking work, and knowing that's your only good leg, because your other one doesn't work well, how are you going to get home?
Oh, yeah, you live in a deserty area. Salt tablets are a thing.
Mm. Usually I'm really good at mammy, but I'm just getting old, dude. I'm just getting old. It was a hot day yesterday.
Well, Psychros is saying that you need to convert to the superior American diet, you know, the one that has like 350, you know, 3,500 milligrams of sodium in every meal.
Well, I had a 350-gram rump steak and chips with salt on them. Plus, I had a liter and a half of cola.
Well, you got to be careful buying chips where you live. They might be crickets.
Yeah, no, I was far enough west to where woke wouldn't accept out there, you know what I mean? And hence I came back with an accent, because you want to really fit in with the pubs out there, because shit can get weird if you're not, like, considered semi-local. They don't want them city slickers coming in and fucking up their communities.
You don't sound like you're from around here, boy.
Uh-huh. No, it's good.
I'm not, good, but fucking, I'm looking for a beer. I mean, you know.
I mean, going racing, you know, at the moment with fucking gasoline prices, holy shit, man. I burnt through $160 worth of gas yesterday in 5 hours.
Jeez, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
doing Targa uphill and downhill. Uphill, man, just drinks fuel.
Oh, I'll bet.
But because we had all the rain and everything, all the waterfalls are flowing. All the creeks were going over the roads and stuff. The grass was green. It was probably the prettiest I've seen it in 10 years up there on the mountain. It was really nice.
So, I mean, that's awesome that it's starting to look like that up there. Wish I could get some of that in my flipping backyard. Anyways.
Oh, you can have the shit in my backyard, dude. It's about five and a half foot high now.
Yeah, can you send me some of that sod? I could flipping use it, man. Tell you what.
I'm not going down there, dude. Not after getting nearly bitten by a snake last night.
No, fair enough.
Yeah, fuck that.
I'll tell you about it after the show. Are you? You weren't on yesterday when I was really upset. So
I'll bet. Anyway, what's the first story?
First story, and this one you may have sent me this one, because I know we were talking about it a little while back, but I've got another one that goes with it to follow it up with. So I figured this would be good discussion. It's from Vice. Students are using AI to write their papers because, of course, they are.
Yeah, we spoke about this one.
Okay. Innovate Rise professors know them as a first-year biochemistry major and an A student. What their professors don't know about them is that they're using a powerful AI language model to finish most of their homework assignments. It would be simple assignments that include extended responses, unquote. Innovate Rye, who asked to use their Reddit handle to avoid detection by their college.
Don't use the same fucking handle.
Don't use anything that's tied to any real accounts. If the news is going to interview me about anything, we're going to be making up some dumbass Xbox online name, like, you know, what's a 12-year-old Xbox username?
360
no hope X59 Fortnite card or something like that. Come on, yeah.
See what I did there, Law? That was for you, buddy.
You know, you say something like that. Don't use your real Reddit handle. No, that's Psychros. I don't want to summon the evil mirror universe version. That's I'm afraid what that would be. For anybody wondering, he's got my name spelled backwards in the chat.
Nice.
Let's see.
Make sure you summon the sexy demons. Madman made a mistake with the incantation last time.
Oh dear.
PSV is still not recovered.
Yeah, for bio, you know, use the Reddit handle to avoid detection by their college told motherboard, quote, for biology, we'd learn about biotech and write five good and bad things about biotech. I would send a prompt to the AI like, quote, what are five good and bad things about biotech, unquote, and it would generate an answer that would get me an A, unquote. So it was a quote within a quote. Without AI, Innovative Rice says that the homework they consider busy work would take them 2 hours. Now homework assignments take them 20 minutes. Yeah, automation will do that. Quote, I like to learn a lot, and sometimes schoolwork that I have done before makes me procrastinate, not turn in the assignment, unquote. Innovate Rye explains. Quote, being able to do it faster and more efficient seems like a skill to me. Innovate Rye isn't alone. Since OpenAI unveiled the latest application programming API for its widely used language model, GPT-3, more students have begun feeding written prompts into OpenAI's Playground and similar programs that use deep learning to generate text. The results continue the initial prompt in a natural-sounding way, often can't be distinguished from human-written text. And the article goes on about this. Basically, they're not sure if... The article kind of goes around and around. It's like, well, is this really useful or not? But, you know, and then at the same time, it's like, I'm kind of thinking, well, if the professors are giving you an A, they're really not reading it that closely. So, I don't know because, I mean, obviously they're just having the computer do their homework for them, right?
Yeah.
So, is that the same as using a calculator to do your math? I don't feel like it is because... Your writing is a little bit more of a communication skill, whereas math is more of a mechanical skill.
And there's a difference between using the calculator to do math you already know that's just long and tedious, and then having the computer do your creative writing assignment.
Well, you're right on that one, Madman, because the computer's calculator is useless unless you know the formulas. So you actually have to retain the knowledge where AI writing it, what's the best you're going to do? Proofread it first, just in case there's some gibberish? Okay.
Well, actually, I like what Psychros is saying in the chat here, saying if you program the calculator, it's often fine. If you download the program, you're cheating. If they program the AI, that's fair game. Well, I guess it'd be training this case, but...
Yeah, I don't think they're going that far.
Well, but you know, he's got a good point because in high school and even in college, I had a TI-86, right? I actually still have one. I don't think it's the same one because I think it broke and I got another one off eBay. But the TI-86, of course, you know, put basic programs in it. And so I would often write programs that would do the formulas. And I had a couple I was really proud of because I had a couple of, you know, teachers who were insistent on you showing your work. So like, you would tell it, you know, what formula you're doing. You'd punch in the numbers, and it would sit there and scroll through the screens telling you what to write. I was really proud of that one. And the instructor asked me where I got that program, and I said, I wrote it. And they said, oh, okay, and just kept going.
Yeah, well, it shows you put the effort in, you know what I mean?
Well, they said if you... Because I was, you know, he asked me about it after class because he wanted a copy of it, for one thing. So I let him get a copy of it off my calculator. I didn't care. And he said, it's fine to use because you obviously understood it well enough to write the program. I'm like, oh, okay.
And this was also probably a teacher that said, you can have the card with the formulas, but you have to show your work. Am I correct?
Sounds right. I think, are we talking about the same teacher?
I believe so.
Okay.
So instead of you having the note card with your formulas, you had the formulas programmed into your calculator, effectively.
Yeah.
So you just needed to know which formula went with what type of problem.
But that part was never very hard. So, but continuing on this, because I only read about part of that story, but I just wanted to point out that it was happening, because I've got this one that goes with it. And this is from a Substack, iCamTuff. It's called Facebooks, or Fake Books. Last year, at the peak of the non-fungible token craze, the author purchased about a dozen high-rated NFT books on Amazon. I know where this is going because I've gotten a couple of these on Audible and gotten refunds for them when you figure out what they are. The author did this because he wanted to publish a balanced critique of NFTs and figured the most honest approach would be to get familiar with the best articulated arguments put forth by the proponents of the tech. The author soon discovered, and I'm trying to in real time translate it because he's written it in first person, and obviously I don't want to read it in first person because that just gets confusing, because then it makes it sound like, you know, Morps did this stuff, and Morps didn't do this stuff. Morps is reading somebody's Substack. So... the author soon discovered that all the books leaned on the same central argument. Value is an inherent consequence of scarcity. His rebuttal that was simple. It's an exception, not a rule. His kids' doodles are scarce, but in a gallery, they wouldn't fetch much. And while this made for a solid Twitter quip, it wasn't enough for an in-depth post. He ditched the project, but he couldn't stop thinking about one of the books, NFTs for Beginners by Matt Martin. At the time of the author's purchase, it ranked number 3 in Amazon search results and had hundreds of 5-star reviews. At first, the book is simply bad, and he's got some examples here of where it's basically got gibberish that doesn't make any sense. And, yeah, it's just got just run-on sentences and garbage information, and it really does look like somebody was just randomly rolling the dice to generate some of these sentences, right? So it's not even one of the newer text AIs. It's like one of the older ones. You know, and he goes, still, it's not out of the ordinary, just another self-published work of a hopefully misguided enthusiast or cynical opportunist. Then as he kept flipping the pages, it got weird. Midway through the book, the narrative seemingly shifted from talking about NFTs to discussing NTF, apparently an acronym for the Net Price Calculator, and part of a supply chain entity called the Strategic Development Group. So, in other words, it somehow, when they were putting it together, somehow got, you know, somebody mistyped a prompt, and it started pulling all this other crap that has nothing to do with NFTs and stuck it in the book. incoherent babble continued for several pages, culminating in another seamless topic shift to the clinical trials for a chemotherapy protocol called NFP. You know, the first theory was that the writing was outsourced to a content farm where multiple individuals worked on portions of the text without caring to understand the context. But there's not really anything you can find on the internet for some of these things. And he said he decided he was probably looking at the output of a machine language-based model such as GPT-3. The models have a remarkably good command of a variety of niche topics, but lack higher-order critical thought. They are prone to viable confabulation, occasionally spew out self-contradictory paragraphs, and drift off topic, especially when taxed with generating longer runs of text. The author didn't have proof, but he's confident he stumbled upon an early example of a monetized machine-generated book. No longer ranks highly on Amazon, and it's been stripped of its hundreds of fake reviews, but, you know, he bets it served its purpose. In other words, it's got all the cash they're going to grab from it, and that's it.
Yeah, so, dude, that's... I'm not even mad at this point. I'm impressed.
But he's got like 10 NFT books that are like that.
Yeah.
Time to go after someone for fraud?
I don't know if it's
piracy. We've gone from piracy to this fucking low effort. You know what I mean?
Well, low effort is definitely right.
That's what I mean. We're not copying anything of value. There's nothing being made here.
But when you put the things on Amazon for $15 a pop and, you know, get your, however you get the fake reviews on there to, you know, bump it up, sell a couple thousand of them.
I mean, if you're seriously reading through reviews on something you want to buy online, you don't fucking need it.
It's probably true.
Tell me I'm wrong. If you truly need it, you're just going to put it in the cart and fucking go, right?
No.
But if you're sitting on the fence, you're going to start reading the reviews to try and talk yourself into it.
Well, that's not entirely true.
My office chair, I was reading reviews to see which ones hold up against the fattest people on the replacement chair. Also, what's comfortable for long hours. I looked at some reviews of people that did exercise equipment in their office chair. Like, you can get little pedals that you can fit under your desk, and you turn your office chair into an exercise bike for a bit while you're typing.
That's cool.
So, yeah, if you're actually seriously buying something that you need and don't want to replace it in 6 months, you do some research.
Well, okay, here's a really good example, because it's not something I desperately needed, but it was something that I thought was cool. And it's on Amazon, there are these LED masks, right? They've got like a LED array in them, and they're all, you know, addressed so it can display images and stuff, and they use a phone app to load them up. I thought that would be fun for Halloween this year, and I decided I wanted one. I did quickly glance down at the reviews just to see if people were saying, oh, it's scam, doesn't hold a charge, because there were a bunch of them. They all looked the same, right? But, of course, they all had some made-up Chinese brand on them. And I noticed that there were several that used a particular app on the phone that all looked the same. And then there were others that looked similar, but the reviews, people said, oh, don't get this, the phone app is malware. And it did have a different name. So the reviews were useful for that, even though what I was buying was fairly frivolous.
Yeah, fair enough.
So,
and as far as the book being fraud, if you're buying a book that's supposed to be a knowledgeable history of NFTs, and it's computer-generated crap that not even all of it has to do with NFT, then yes, it's fraud. Similarly, if I were buying, I don't know, a collection of Hellboy comics, and I get some doodles of Hellboy in the mail, theft by deception. Definite fraud.
Well, some of the books were just bad, right? Like, it was basically like a regurgitated version of a Wikipedia page, right? What I gathered. And then others were just downright weird. Now, I've gotten a couple of books on Audible when I was doing some stuff for work and wanted to see some metaverse stuff, actually. And now, at least the nice thing with doing an ebook is it was fairly easy to get a return or get a refund on these things electronically, because it's just like, I don't, you know, you listen to the first two chapters of it, and it's just like, what the hell is this? And, you know, so of course you do immediate refund and get your credit back. But it was just like, it was very weird because it made no sense. And some poor guy had to sit there and read this crap to make an audiobook out of it. It's just like, I don't know what he's saying. It doesn't make... And you know the guy reading it was just doing it in his sleep or something, because he was just droning, right? It's just like, what is this? So I've seen a couple of them. But this guy found a bunch of them, and I guess NFTs would be where you would see it, right? And you're probably going to see that for any you know, quick niche topic where something pops up and is real popular for like a minute and then goes away, because it's a quick way to generate a book to get out there and try to, you know, pump it up with fake reviews, right? Before anybody can, you know, because if you sell like, theft by deception, but, you know, you sell a $10 book, $15 book, a couple hundred thousand copies of it before anybody realizes that it's crap, and just abscond with the profit and disappear. I mean, I could see that being lucrative.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
I need to look and see how hard it is. I haven't really messed with it much. I did set up one of the image generators on the broadcast box just to play with, because it had a fairly easy setup. So maybe it'd be worth setting up a local copy of GPT-3 or whatever just to play with it, see what it generates. So, If it works really well, we'll start having articles on Galaxy 15. They won't be human involved at all. They'll just be some script I've written to go pull shit off the internet and generate text and dump it out. But it'd be a fun experiment.
What source material are you going to give it?
Well, I mean, there's always 4chan. Not B. Like, I don't know, poll or something.
DIY.
Oh, there you go.
DIY and auto. Two of the most useless fucking boards around.
Well, I mean, that's the goal, right? It's like make it very obvious that you're not being... I don't know, see how many people you get subscribing to on like a Substack or something.
Yeah, people would. They'd do it just for the daily lols, you know what I mean?
Just to see what the hell it is.
His original content's hard to find. I mean, especially if you're just consuming that shit 8 hours a day.
I wonder if you could do it in layers, right? You know, have the first text generation be to generate your topics, like as a series of sentences. Break that up and then feed a sentence in to like break it up into your paragraphs or your sections of your article. You see what I'm thinking?
Yeah, I see where you're taking.
As opposed to trying to do one big long form generation, like run it through a few times to, you know, try to get something a little bit more coherent out of it by being a little smarter about what you feed it, as opposed to just, you know, hoping for a 10-page prompt from, you know, a couple of sentences. I don't know. It might be worth setting it up and playing with it just to see what we can do. Not this weekend. I've got shit to do this weekend, but sometime. So, I don't know. But, I mean, you know, people are writing papers with it. People are selling books with it. Is the author... And that's a real question, though. Is the person who wrote it the person who wrote the AI or trained the AI? Or is it the person who fed it the prompt?
Because, I have no idea.
Because the machine can't take credit for it. Although Cycros was asking in the IRC how long before some of these AI generation, you know, some of the people who own some of the AI stuff start suing the students for copyright infringement. There was something else, too. I think it was, one of the clip art sites, maybe it was Getty, no, I forget which one it was. One of them was saying that they were going to use AI-generated imagery and still pay the people who posted it. They were just going to allow it. So.
You're not making anything.
I don't know. I honestly don't know what the answer is on that one because it's.
I mean, modern art's horse shit anyway. It's getting more degenerate by the day.
Well, that's true. All right.
Yeah, I don't see any value in AI art unless you're looking for a quick cover or something like that to make something.
Well, I could see it as...
It's not art.
I could see it as a prompt, right? Like, if you're trying to come up with a painting and you need something that, you know, you just need some ideas, I could see feeding into one of those image generators a bunch of ideas to kind of, you know, give you some base stock things to work with so you could, like, then pull them into Photoshop and transform it into whatever you need or...
Yeah, I don't see Photoshop as art either. It comes a lot closer to actually having to have input into the process, but I wouldn't consider it wall hanging.
Well, it depends on what you're doing with it, right? If you're competing in the old FARC Photoshop contests where you're just clipping a bunch of images together to make something funny, I mean, there's art to that, but you're right, you're not... You know,
well, there's
like
a creativity to that. Morph.
But if you're doing the digital...
It's not an art form.
If you're doing the digital painting, though, I think that counts. You know, if somebody's got a tablet and they're sitting there, you know, drawing in whatever that... Whether it's Photoshop or something else, I think that counts. I think that's art. Just because they're using a computer, I don't think discounts it.
It's not a hill I'm willing to die on, so I'll just let it go. There we go.
I mean, is it only art if you went out into the wild and collected your own leaves and seeds to make your own paints?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just curious because I mean that's you know, how far down the tech tree do you have to go for it to count? I guess is what I'm asking.
You've got to be able to use third party product, as in your environment around you, to mix in with paints and stuff like that to make it yours. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna go with, it depends on how automated it is. I've seen people that can actually sketch, actually also draw in a like paint program where they're using a stylus instead of a pencil. But if you're having the computer generate the image, it's not art, it's the computer generated image.
Well, I'm quite open to just the discussion on it, but this isn't the place. But yeah, I'm staying right where I am on it. It's not art. It's like electronic music is not music.
Hmm.
I don't know, because I think Pink Floyd's music.
A lot of that was done physically, Madman, and then altered later.
They were one of the early bands to screw around with synthesizers and effects on the guitars and things like that.
Yeah, I made their own wow pedals and shit like that. And it, yeah, it, this isn't the place for the discussion on art.
No, but it sounds like it'd be an interesting one.
Oh, I'm quite willing to argue my position on it.
Well, let's hold on to that for the discussion to open next week with, because I think that'd be interesting. Because you're not, I mean, I'm with you when it comes to the AI generated stuff, because I mean, it's useful, but I think you're right. I don't think there was a real creative process there. I think you're just, you've got a computer that makes nice looking random noise, right? Whereas random noise can be a useful thing, it's not, you know, you're right, it's not a deliberate creative process. But when you're just saying using a computer at all means it's not art, I don't know that I agree with that.
Yeah, we'll take it to the Brains Trust over the weekend and we'll start an argument over there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
So
I'm willing to have it. Anyway, next story.
Okay. Next story is from The Register. The makers of an algorithm that calculates the optimum rent to charge for homes has been accused of causing an unfair and artificial hike in costs for tenants. Texas-based RealPage and 9 real estate giants have been hit in a lawsuit that claims the software developer formed a cartel with the landlords to drive up rent in cities where housing is in high demand in the U.S. Outside of things like rent control, setting rent is a balancing act involving supply and demand. Set it too low and you may not cover the mortgage and other costs, if applicable, as well as miss out on profit. Set it too high and you'll price yourself out of the market. Wouldn't it be handy if there was some kind of app that could automatically identify a sweet spot for rent on a per-home basis? The lawsuit, brought by 5 renters this month, claimed the 9 property-managing giants competed against one another prior to 2016, but found a way to collude with one another via a third party, RealPage. It's claimed RealPage's software was used by the group to collectively set rent and ensure none of them undercut each other, thus inflating the cost for tenants. The plaintiffs in the case filed in San Diego, California, are Sherry Bastin, Lois Wynn, I don't want to read all their names. They are together suing in what could turn into a class action the managers of hundreds of thousands of apartments, Graystar, Lincoln Property Co., blah, 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 blah. Beginning in approximately 2016 and potentially earlier, the lessors replaced their independent pricing and supply decisions with collusion, according to the federal district court complaint. Quote, lessors agreed to use a common third party that collected real-time pricing and supply levels and used that data to make unit-specific pricing and supply recommendations. Lessors also agreed to follow these recommendations on the expectation that competing lessors would do the same. RealPage's algorithm, dubbed YieldStar, calculated how apartments should be priced depending on various factors, including location and demand. Property managers using the software are free to accept or reject the algorithm's suggestions, though they are heavily encouraged in regular calls with RealPage to follow its pricing, it's claimed. Following an investigation that sparked the above lawsuit, ProPublica reported the code ingests data, including rent for surrounding homes, to figure out an optimal price. Quote, The machines quickly learned the only way to win is to push prices above competitive levels, unquote. Murray Strzok, University of Tennessee law professor and former prosecutor in the Justice Department's Antitrust Division, told the publication. YieldStar thus increases rental prices, it's claimed. Indeed, according to the lawsuit, RealPage boasted that its software drives, quote, rental rate improvements year over year, between 5% and 12% in every market. If numerous property owners use the same software to price apartments, it stifles competitions and raises average rental costs in a city, the lawsuit stated. Renters suffered by having to pay more, while landlords benefit by helping each other raise market prices, the plaintiffs allege. They accuse RealPage of breaking Section 1 of the Sherman Act, which states agreements that reasonably restrict trade are illegal. It's claimed RealPage and its real estate giants were all knowingly on the same page when it came to using the software. Spokesperson for RealPage denied the lawsuit's allegations, blah, blah, blah. So, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if that's willful. I mean, is it willful collusion if they're all using the same sourcing to get their pricing? Knowingly or not?
I've been going with knowingly. I'm not sure it's collusion, just the way prices are usually set, the landlord looks at what's a 3-bedroom going for in this area with the amenities I have. Oh, it's going for about $700. Mine's a new property. I'm going to try $750. And if it doesn't go for that, they drop it $725 and then $700. But they don't, no one starts at zero. So if this software is just looking at what are apartments going for in this area, it's automating the process the landlord was already doing.
Well, and of course, the rent's gone up from 2016. Have you seen the inflation numbers? So,
the ones they're showing or the one you know?
Either.
Yeah, both of them are bad.
Mm-hmm. So
just transitory, don't worry.
But it's an interesting concept because this could apply to more than just this rent pricing software, right? Because most companies are switching over to using Office 365 for their email, right? Instead of running their own internal email servers. A lot of companies, a lot of organizations are switching over to using these cloud services for various things. And I'm sure a lot of them are picking the same cloud services. I think there's, what, 2 major payroll companies in the United States? Because that's where they get a lot of the payroll statistics from that people outsource payroll to. It's an interesting legal theory that it constitutes collusion by using an outsource like this for what was an internal company function. And I'm curious to see how this goes because it could actually mandate that you have to publish who your third parties are so that people can make sure they're not all using the same ones and accidentally colluding. I don't, of course the lawsuit is saying, oh, it's intentional because they're trying to drive prices up. I mean, if it's true, it's antitrust or possibly even racketeering.
No, it'd be antitrust. Racketeering, they'd have to be doing a criminal act. So if they're like doing this to, I don't know, set up whorehouses, that would be racketeering.
But that's a good point. But I'm not sure it really is. It just sounds like they're all using the same third party pricing service.
And what's bizarre is we haven't done it with a pricing service, but it's not collusion if I just peg my price close to a competitor. So if I'm making pizza and I see Pizza Hut has their large pizza for $15, so long as I don't go over and talk to Pizza Hut and say, let's set our large pizzas to $15. If I set my large pizza to $15, we're not colluding.
True, but you might look at what Pizza Hut is charging and say, well, if I charge $14.50, I'll sell more pizzas than Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
And what they're alleging is that they all agreed not to do that, that they all agreed to go by what the software says and that's it.
And then you also think, is Pizza Hut selling it for $15? Because that's the lowest amount of profit they can use to stay open, in which case it's probably going to be close to the lowest amount of profit I can use to stay open, unless I find some innovation they don't have. And how do you innovate on an apartment?
You run a bodega out of it.
I mean, you could make a crack about 3D printing new ones, but
Meth lab.
yeah, but yeah, that'd be.
Is
Do you do what
the
they're doing
price
in
that goes
Japan?
into the goes into a an apartment, if you're going the same square footage, it's going to be what does the city charge for property taxes on that amount of space? What does an insurance company charge to insure that amount of space? And then maintenance costs.
Not to mention if you have a mortgage or something on it, yeah.
Yeah, and mortgage rates, they're about the same if you have about the same credit rating. So almost all of those are fixed. The only one that I could think of that could vary would be maintenance, because some tenants are harder on apartments than others, and a lot of those harder tenants happen to be lower income.
Well, the other thing I'm thinking too is they're bringing in the case in California, so I'm betting this is mostly a California problem. And in California, housing supply has been a concern for several years now. So it's not surprising that the pricing would go up because
They're a housing shortage.
it's basically impossible to build new apartments and housing in any of the major cities in California for various reasons, mainly crazy law and city council related ones, but that, and I think in California, any group that wants to can bring a lawsuit to stop property development without
Correct.
standing.
Everyone has standing because you're infecting the environment in California.
Yeah.
And if you're in San Francisco, there's a limit to how tall you can build an apartment building. So, whereas a developer might, go 12 stories, they might not be able to build them that high. I forget what the limit is, but in San Francisco, it's kind of a low limit for a major city on how tall you can have a building.
Yeah. So I'm wondering how much of it is. There's a lot. I think there's a lot of other factors in play, and it almost. I mean, at least to me, it almost reads like they found something to blame, and that they're all using this pricing service. But it's an interesting theory that if all these companies using the same pricing service does run afoul of antitrust, I mean, I don't know.
That
I'd
would
like to see where the
have,
outcome of it. How about that?
oh yeah, because it's going to determine how much a company can outsource, because they'll be opening themselves up to this same antitrust problem. How many inventory management systems are there?
Well, and
A
then there's the
lot.
question of how many do you really need? So, anyways, next story. RU sent me this one. It's from Apple Insider. Apple supplier TSMC believes that U.S. efforts to rebuild its chip manufacturing at home are doomed to fail as it finds itself caught between China and the United States in a tech cold war. Morris Chang founded TSMC in 1987 when Taiwan recruited him from the U.S. to help build an electronics industry. The contract manufacturer rose to become the top chipmaker in the world, commanding 20% of the global wafer fabrication and 92% of advanced chip capacity. So, for one thing, the fact that one company now holds 92% of advanced chip capacity is a problem.
A big problem.
I knew TSMC was a big player. I didn't realize they held 92%.
They are the player.
Yeah.
It, once you get to that much, you are the player.
So, U.S. share in global chip manufacturing shrunk from 37% in 1990 to 12% in 2020. But the country wants to regain its dominance. In particular, the U.S. Department of Defense is worried that the country's dependence on Taiwan could put chip supplies for the defense industry at risk. They're probably right. In response, President Biden signed the CHIPS Act into law on August 9th, 2022. It provides over $52 billion to help U.S. companies build new semiconductor facilities, fund research, and expand existing manufacturing. Taiwan isn't happy about the move because it sees its semiconductor dominance as a silicon shield. The government believes that if China were to attack the country, U.S. would come to its aid to prevent China from seizing the industry. And again, at least today, they're probably right. Well, I don't know. Biden's pretty pro-China. Trump would have.
I don't know. Biden still would. And I don't know if Biden would or whatever puppet master's pulling his string.
Somebody would say, we have to do this, yeah.
But there would be a fight. That's the only reason I think the U.S. would attempt to defend Taiwan.
So... when the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan in August, she met with Morris Chang and Mark Liu, chair of TSMC. Chang told Pelosi that Washington's efforts to rebuild its chip manufacturing were doomed to fail, according to Taiwan's Financial Times. But the United States may not have much choice. Analysts at investment bank Credit Suisse have estimated that if the world loses access to Taiwan's chip plants, it will disrupt production for everything from computers to cars. Apple would be impacted too, as it relies heavily on TSMC for chip production. While it has expanded some of its manufacturing into other countries, such as Vietnam and India, those moves do not diversify Apple's chip supply at all. Still, TSMC remains a major supplier for Apple and other companies, and its future between the U.S. and China is still uncertain. The, quote, "the monopoly in semiconductor production creates instability," unquote, said Brad Martin, director of National Security Supply Chain Institute at the RAND Corporation. Quote, "if the U.S. is faced with a need to make a decision between protecting its economy and defending Taiwan, it starts to become a very stark decision," unquote. TSMC has made some efforts to help the U.S. by planning a semiconductor facility in Arizona. The first such chip facility will develop outside its home country. TSMC expects it will reach its production start in early 2024. So, geez, I'm just still floored by that number. I didn't realize it was 92%.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't see how it'd be doomed to fail here if it's succeeding in Taiwan.
Competitive pricing and things like that, man. I mean, well, taxes.
Chip manufacturing is not exactly the cleanest process, and our environmental laws make it hard.
All right, I could possibly see that because the reason I was thinking is the standard in living in Taiwan, their average income, I believe, is higher than the U.S. So it's not like we're going to have issues with can they outcompete us on pay if they're building these in the South and in the Midwest. We cannot compete them on pay.
Well, there's also there's a few other issues that will make it difficult. One is simple knowledge of those kinds of manufacturing processes. You know, there's not a lot of people out. You know, if TSMC really holds that much, there's not a lot of people outside of that company that actually have the experience in running those kinds of fabrication plants. You know, outside of that company, so. We're going to have to be, you know, if we're going to set up new chip fabs here, we're going to have to be recruiting people out of TSMC. Not to mention, TSMC probably likes having that kind of market dominance because it probably gives them a lot of leverage in pricing and market controls. And so I have a feeling part of the reason they're saying it's doomed to fail is because they're trying to, you know, hedge their bets. They're trying to be like, oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. You know, they don't want any more competition. You know, I think that's one of the reasons they said, okay, we'll build a plant in Arizona, is to try to keep us from getting other competitors involved. I think part of that article is TSMC. Oh, go ahead.
I'm just thinking, if it takes San Francisco 3 years to build one toilet, how long is it going to take them to build a chip facility? I'm just saying.
They've already started, and according to this article, I think Morp said it'd be up and running in 2024.
The one in Arizona.
Two more years?
Yeah.
Okay. When it's up and running, I'll believe it.
Well, that's a fair point. These things are not easy to get up and running. It's a lot of precision equipment that has to be ran at specific tolerances. And again, with a lot of the manufacturing processes of these chips, where you're talking about things that are nanometers thick when it comes to the layers of copper in between the silicone. Silicon, not silicone. Anyways, you know, simple things like what's in the air and the amount of moisture can fuck with that process.
Yeah.
And
that's maybe why they chose a desert.
And one of the reasons that, you know, I was talking about getting the experience down is even when you look at chip yields, you know, out of a wafer, you know, it's something like 30% of the chips that they make out of a wafer are garbage. They just don't work. Sometimes they can, you know, disable cores and make down spec. Like that's what they do for a lot of graphics cards and stuff, where you have all the three different SKUs of your graphics card. A lot of them have the same chip and they've just gone in and disabled cores because the cores failed the test because the manufacturing wasn't so good. There was a line of Radeon cards several years back. I think this has happened a couple of times where people went into the firmware and figured out how to re-enable the disabled cores just to see if they were able to get them to run, because a lot of times they would disable cores on good chips just to meet the manufacturing needs for the mid-range cards. So, you know, basically free upgrade to the higher clocked card, maybe not as much RAM, but, you know, unlocking cores and stuff like that just to get a little bit more performance, kind of get in between, as opposed to just a stock mid-range. So, I don't know. Like you said, when it's up and making chips is when we'll know. But speaking of various issues with graphics cards, this is from The Verge. NVIDIA investigating reports of RTX 4090 power cables burning or melting.
Damn.
NVIDIA says it's investigating two reports of RTX 4090 cards that have had power cables burn or melt. Reddit user Regigaki was the first to post the details about their Gigabyte RTX 4090 issues yesterday, showing burn damage to the new 12 VHPWR adapter that NVIDIA ships with the RTX 4090. The connector on the actual card was also damaged and melted. A second Reddit poster replied to the same thread, showing off damage to an Asus RTX 4090 graphics card power connector, so it's not just one manufacturer. Quote, "We're investigating reports," unquote, said NVIDIA spokesperson Brian Del Rizzo in a statement to The Verge. Quote, "We are in contact with the first owner and be reaching out to the other for additional information." NVIDIA initially moved to this new 16-pin power connector for its own RTX 3090 cards, and it has now become the standard on the RTX 40 series of GPUs across vendors. There are concerns that the power connector, which is designed for the new ATX 3.0 power supplies, could cause issues if it's bent a certain way. The connector and its terminals are a lot smaller than the previous generation, and CableMod warns it appears that bending the wires too close to the connector could result in some of the terminals coming loose or misaligning within the connector itself. That means that means the connector is not designed well. The site recommends not bending the connector vertically or horizontally, instead having a minimum distance of 35 millimeter from the connector before any bends occur. That's rather difficult in practice, with NVIDIA's adapters hitting the side panels in most modern cases. The original Reddit poster vertically mounted the RTX 4090, which means the cable could have bent before the minimum distance. YouTuber Jay's Two Cents, who has been warning about this new connector for weeks, calls it dangerous, but NVIDIA doesn't agree. Quote, "I think you're worrying about issues that don't exist," unquote, said Brandon Bell, senior technical marketing manager at NVIDIA, in an email to Jay last month. Well, of course they're going to say that. In early September, PCI SIG, industry consortium responsible for developing standards around peripheral component I/O data transfers, warned that some implementations of the 12 VHPWR connector, quote, "have demonstrated thermal variance, which could result in safety issues under certain conditions." So
it's on fire, yo.
Yeah, shit's on fire, yo. Other manufacturers are starting to make the connector. So I think there was a post more recently that some people have figured out that they've figured out what's happening, like which pins are bending and contacting on the inside to heat up. But and there's some other manufacturers starting to make cables that should be a little bit more robust. But yeah, you might want to steer clear of this till they get it sorted out. Unless you like the smell of burning plastic. And the final article I have from tonight is from AP News and is hilarious. A Missouri jury has convicted a father and son for attacking a Pokemon Go rival in a dispute that ended with all three men in a lake.
An actual fist fight over Pokemon Go.
It gets better. The St. Louis County jury on Wednesday found that Robert Missouri, 75, and Angelo Missouri, 33, or Matizuri, M-A-T-T-E-U-Z-Z-I, I'm guessing on how to say that name, guilty of third-degree assault. Jurors recommended a sentence of 3 days in jail and a fine for the father and only a fine for the son. Pokemon Go is augmented reality video game which players walk around outside hunting for animated monsters on their phones. In June of 2018, the Missouris were on one team and the victim was on another. Both teams wanted to claim a Kirkwood Park gym, a site in the game where teams can compete for control. After a scuffle, Angelo Missouri and the victim rolled into a lake. Prosecutors said Robert Missouri jumped in, dunked the victim, and held him underwater while his son punched him. The victim suffered facial abrasions and other injuries, according to, including to his eye. Quote, grown men, including a man in his 70s, coming to blows over a childish game that they are playing is ridiculous, but there is nothing funny about the injuries sustained by the victim, who could have drowned, unquote. Prosecuting attorney Wesley Bell said in a news release. I mean, dragged his ass into a lake and tried to drown him over Pokemon Go. 75-year-old.
Imagine my shock.
I know, but it's hilarious.
I'm shocked that a 75-year-old's playing Pokemon Go.
Madman. How are you shocked? In the last 3 years, nothing should shock you anymore, Madman.
I'm just envisioning like an old dude, ex-Marine, dragging somebody's ass into the lake and beating them mercilessly. It's my fucking Charizard.
Dude, people are walking off cliffs playing that fucking game.
I survived Nom. You're not gonna take away my Pikachu.
That's where the kid went wrong. He should have screamed Charlie in the trees. The guy would have hit the fucking deck.
Incoming. Oh, God, I gotta yell that the next time I'm in a Legion or a VFW.
Oh, yes, but I want you to wear a GoPro because I want to see the shit kicked out of you. Fucking POV.
Somebody just pulls out a gun.
I'm fucking, yeah, go into a return fucking, you know, league place and start fucking around. You'll find out real quick.
Well, Madman, I know you have access to the Legion, so...
I fully support those men kicking your ass, Madman.
Just wear a GoPro.
Just wear a GoPro. I want to watch it. We'll put it up on Pornhub. Young man gets fucked by old gang. You know, something like that.
Put a little Brazzers logo down in the corner.
Uh-huh.
All right. Only one thing for you tonight in Dojo, even though it is two links, because there's an article about it. Memtest has put out its first update in 9 years. So if anybody's not familiar with it, Memtest is a little free open source program that you can boot into on, you know, without an operating system or anything like that. Bootable, you know, usually bootable off a flash disk. And it does a whole bunch of data writes and reads to your RAM. And the idea is that you're testing to see if you have any bad sticks of memory. Now, admittedly, at least in my career, I have found bad memory in new hardware to be fairly uncommon. I think I've only actually encountered bad RAM twice, you know, in hardware that I've purchased for myself. Now, that said, if you're dealing in a lot of used hardware, like, you know, buying it, you know, flipping things on eBay or whatever, or if you're, like, dealing with, like, large, you know, things that don't, you know, like, maybe, like, a university where they don't rotate their hardware that often, running Memtest is, on these things is actually very useful because you're actually testing for bad RAM. But that said, it also is great for testing other aspects of the system, because if Memtest comes back consistently, one of the best use cases I found for it was when I had a system that I wasn't sure what was going on with it, and it kept crashing during memtest. And what was actually happening was that it was the power supply wasn't putting out what it was rated for. I think it was an older supply, and I think it was just going bad on me. It was that power supply going bad, because when I moved it into another system, it blew a couple of caps. You know, loud bang. Madman knows what that sounds like.
Yes. And then he'd be like, well, it couldn't be my Xbox because I'm still watching the movie. And guess who was wrong?
It's like, but yeah, it was useful because it exercises the system. And so even if it's coming back, you know, you can validate your test. If it's failing the same way every time, okay, yeah, you've probably got bad memory. But if you swap memory and you're still getting the same tests, maybe you've got a bad RAM slot. Or like I was having, where it was crashing randomly. You know, in this case, it was bad power. But it's just a nice program to have because it's a good way of exercising the memory on the system, which is a good way of finding problems, even if it's not, you know, directly bad RAM. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Tom's Hardware has an article writing up on it, because the big thing with this update is that they've added support for a bunch of modern Intel and AMD chips and features, because they stopped development in 2013, something like that. And so, yeah, they've come back and they've added support for DDR4 and DDR5, support for up to 256 cores. So, you know, it's useful for testing servers and stuff like that. And yeah, version 6 is a unified, free, open-source memory testing tool released under GNU GPL version 2.0. The new V6 codebase, originally called PC Memtest, was provided by Martin Whitaker based on Memtest 86 Plus V5, and both are now working for Memtest 86 Plus. So, it's unrelated to Memtest 86, closed-source freemium software released in 2013 by Passmark. So, it's just nice to see that this tool's been updated, because I think Memtest has been included in every one of the pre-built USB tester disks that I've used, especially back when I was doing hardware all the time and having to troubleshoot workstations and things like that. And you know, ever since I've accepted that my job is no longer what it used to be, it feels better. You know what I mean? Just accepting that my job is no longer what it was. Now it's telling other people.
You're through these 7 stages of grief. Acceptance.
Yeah, I've just kind of accepted that, oh, I tell other people what to do and run Word and spreadsheets now, as opposed to, you know, Kali Linux.
No longer the elite hacks or
process, you know, watch progress bars and break into various networks, at least, you know, while getting paid. Do whatever I want at home, but yeah, I guess I'm not a. I guess I don't get to claim to be a professional hacker anymore, huh?
There you go.
No, you're the manager of professional hackers.
It's kind of sad.
Put together the Wonder Twins.
Oh, you do get to claim to be supervillain, though. You now have minions.
Thank you, Madman. That helps. That's cool.
I don't get to break into systems. That's Patsy and Flopsy's job. Patsy? Patsy, here, boy. I need you to do some pen testing for me. I'm going to write up the report and kill Superman.
At least you didn't say Flotsam and Jetsam. That's all I got for tonight. Of course, you know, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, CyberLard, Psychros, Madman, myself, Not a Coffee Maker, Sardonyx, and the Soylent Bomb. Madman, closing thoughts.
That company was taking "if it's not broken, don't fix it" way too far. The whole not updating for 9 years, there have been some RAM updates since then.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, that's why it's cool they put out a new version, because it wasn't very useful on modern systems. Or, I mean, actually, it would run. It was just really slow because it wasn't able to optimize at all. Are you? Closing thoughts.
I wish they'd stop remaking movies with female leads. That would be nice, because they remade 47 Ronin, but from a woman's perspective, and they're all woman ninjas.
Wait a minute. So they're cleaning? They're in the house cleaning.
I don't know, man. I haven't forced myself to watch the movie yet. I was just asked.
They're cooking for samurai?
I don't know, man. But I'm just going to leave it right there. Yeah, that's for the Roomba to clean up. But it's
has anybody turned into a tree carpet yet?
Hold up. No, it's not 47 Ronin. It's 47 Geisha. And it's a limited release. Certain theaters, Pee Wee Herman might be in the background.
Either way.
All right. I think it's time to play sound effects and close out the show.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Oh, fuck.
I'm passing out.
And now I don't suffer. Because I got a bottle of 60 warm hugs from God.
Just naked, fat, black, crippled dykes are hard to find.
These nuts.